This is Jan Cox Talk number 2991, recorded May 14th, 2003.
Something came to mind that no one's ever noticed, as far as I know. But if the rest of the world had the interest that we have, it is absolutely a bright, dark forest of intrigue. A come hither to the nervous systems, the consciousness of people like us. And it's this. You can look at, without any doubt, well, it is, but I'm just saying you can, it's easily seen, that all the world's myths, all the great religious tales, all the many, from all over the world, the myths and the religious stories of a substitution of an earth god, a son of God, a demigod, of sacrificing himself for the benefit of the people. Jesus being crucified on the cross being the Western version. That he gave his life and he suffered so that you don't have to suffer. However that works out. And the resurrection of Jesus, which is true, again, stories as old as history. But all of these stories, all of man's myths, all of man's fiction, it can all be seen as one thing, because I say it's what it is. I leave it open to your observation. It is our nervous system. It is life through our nervous system. Take your choice, speculating, dreaming, wishing, one of the three, of its future. So within that, the condensed version would be all cultures, all men's, the various dreams of a paradise, a heaven, an Elysian field. And they are all, whether they be 5,000 years old or recent, and no matter what part of the planet they come from, they all are the same. The descriptions of heaven, that if you do, if you live by what is prescribed by the local religion, then after you die, you will go to a better place than earth, and it can be described very, very succinctly. I submit to you that they all amount to three characteristics, and that's all. First off, obviously, you never die. That is, you die here. But then if you've been a good boy or girl, then you are born somewhere else, or you show up somewhere else, or you become conscious somewhere else in paradise, in which place you will never die again. There is no death. The second step is just a variation of that. I should say the first step. That's the overall. That's really the end of it. But you're never sick. No illness. Number two, no hunger. Is not normally described, at least in the Christian and Jewish and Muslim way, not necessarily that way, but it says that there will be an unlimited supply of your favorite food. Which sounds better than say you'll never be hungry again. That's for starving people. The third one is, that's rarely mentioned in the West, unlimited access and supply of sex. That's it. Think about it. In the wildest dreams, in the most wild-eyed, fanatical cults, sects of all the world's religions, nobody comes up with anything else. You know what I just described? Man's nervous system at the non-conscious level, the instinctive life of man's nervous system, has described its existence from top to bottom. There is nothing else at that level. Here's what's noticed, though. Not noticed. It's our mind. It's our nervous system into consciousness. The top of our nervous system, where conscious thought is, That is the source, that is the creator of all ideas of heaven. What is lacking in all the pictures of heaven that the mind creates? Come on, the clock's running out. Any mention of the mind? Folks, I'm telling you, that is ponderous. Before I move on, this was not tonight's topic, I want to be sure that you hear me. It's our nervous system. As far as we know in this universe, our nervous system is the only one that has produced thought. And thought, as I have so freely pointed out to you, is all motivated by the non-thinking part of the nervous system, by what we feel, by our temperament, by all instinct to survive. It comes in a very plain, from a very plain direct source, and it is run through what amounts to, when you reach the cortex, like a kaleidoscope. It is like a flowering of those kind of drawings you used to see of, I think it was Peter Max back in the 60s, these psychedelic posters of just parallel colors, the strands of colors running up like into rainbows or into trees that just blossom out into more and more, you know, obscenely different colors. That is what happens to us. It starts out, you could say, if you can picture this, like a tree. It starts out and it's brown, dull, gray, bland, because all it is our instinct to survive, which is, if you must split it up, the need for food, slice, water, the need for sex for the species itself, and that's it. And as long as you have your health, as long as you do not are not deathly ill, not having a terminal illness, then you're alive. But that is a very plain, direct, unadorned trunk. And you can see this trunk as being the nervous system, all the way up through the brain stem, all the way up into the brain itself, up to the cortex. The cortex is when this long tree, that, you know, relatively speaking, I'm sure you can picture it yourself, I got a nervous system being this tree, then this tree, the trunk from the base up to where it starts flowering, let's say would be, what, 3 feet, and then like an inch is all this flowering. But it's all the sap, it's all the brown, unexciting, well, it's not the word, is it? All of this very plain and very confined, because there's nothing you can add to our needs to survive. Nobody ever seems to have thought of that. Of course, I don't know why they should. But you can't add. You can add to everything else. Although it's imaginary adding to imaginary affairs. But like, you can always imagine that God just issued an 11th commandment. Nobody can stop you. You can imagine that it takes more now to be a faithful member of the Communist Party than it did in 1917. You can imagine that you're a smarter person than you were. You can do all of that. And people do all of that. But what do people never do? Nobody ever imagines. Even madmen, as far as I know, having read a few madmen case histories, no one has ever thought, ever shown up and go, I just discovered we have another instinctive drive. People imagine that they talk to the dead. People imagine that they're visited in their bedroom by creatures from Orion. But nobody imagines that they have discovered a heretofore unknown instinctive drive. But at any rate, no one notices that in all of the dreams of heaven, which is, I repeat, it's our nervous systems. You think about it, but this is not just a theory, it's the only observable conclusion to make. that all of the myths and all the dreams, because you look at it and it fits all of this description and nothing else, that it's our nervous system, once it got into consciousness, once it started producing consciousness in our brain, and there it is, producing thoughts, and after some time our consciousness had free time and the thoughts began to play around, that they were not at every moment being driven by instinctive needs, that our thoughts were not being pulled into employment continually to help our total being go look for food, to plan, to plot how to get food tomorrow. In its free time, the nervous system began to fictionalize, began to make up gods, all the myths, all the stories, nowadays our movies, computer games. It's all the nervous system speculating slash wishing, speculating or slash dreaming of what it could be, how it wishes it could be, how it hopes it will be. And I repeat, I see the epitome, the condensed epitome of all of it, is all of mankind's ideas of paradise, an afterlife paradise. So it's all produced from our mind. That was not the source of it, but this is the active, observable creator of all of our dreams of paradise, all of mankind's, and all of these dreams like one thing, a mention of the mind, the very son of a gun that created it. There is no dream, there is no idea in any religion, any cult's idea of paradise that says, of course you'll never die, but there is no illness. You'll be healthy, illness-free for eternity. You will always be full. You'll never be hungry. You'll never be thirsty. Never again. And if you're so inclined, there'll be all the sex you want. And you will be brilliant. Not even a mention. And no one's ever noticed but me. And now I'm sorry I did, because now, what's there to look forward to after you die? How about unlimited sex? Oh, I'm sorry. slipped my mind there for a second. I am delighted personally that I brought up and started last time we met what I was doing. For those of you that haven't heard the tape or weren't here, after a whole lot of prefacing, which I always am inclined to do, that it had nothing to do with me, I pointed out that I realized that I had been doing things all my life that I did not plan to do, that I did not read about, I was not attempting to do, but it was after the fact that I realized I was doing them that was natural to me, and as far as I was concerned. Looking back now, they were not only helpful, but if a person was not in some way inclined to be like I described me being, I can't believe that they would ever achieve what you're supposed to be wanting to achieve, to wake up, to understand in some extraordinary way what's going on. I have had more fun once I decided to do that for the last 2 days than I have in a long time. I'm delighted. Because there is a multitude. There's my whole life. Except I still find it distasteful, even after all my prefacing and me knowing what I meant. I still don't like, it just annoys me, saying me, 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 and that's where I was. But there is this. If you'll notice all of the dreams of religions, all the dreams of all the mystical systems in the world, and I can feel it, I mean, it's not any organization's fault, it's not some institutional flaw in the life of humanity, it's in all of us, but it's an idea, if there is a Shangri-La, if there is this ideal community of which you might be a part, the ideal community will be all people of a like kind. Well, all Christians, they imagine heaven's going to be full of what? Let me guess, Buddhist? some Buddhists and, you know, a few Jews and maybe some atheists. Well, I assume you get the point. And I guess at one time I assumed, as maybe you did, that everyone, like when I used the simple thoughts of myself, the terms that I thought, well, everyone awake, it is a transformation, and therefore everyone is transformed into something similar. That is, all awakened people would have to be some sort of community, whether they knew each other or not. That if they did, suddenly I'll be thrown in a room, or a group of them. They would just all recognize each other, and that if I was there, or another awake person could stand and look back, and it will all make sense. Well, yeah, there, I can see the common denominator in them all. That, just right quickly, I tell you whether you know it or not, that is, whether it be codified and expressed or not, that is a common belief that runs throughout, continually, up to now. It runs throughout, let us say, the mystical community throughout the world. Not just religion, but the mystical community. Everyone who believes that they're waking up or can only wake up or achieve enlightenment through being a Sufi, a Zenist, whether they say this or not, whether anyone states this or not, I'm telling you, you should be able to feel it. It's in their nervous system, in their mind's part of the nervous system. Someone trying to wake up by being a Sufi, you know, whatever they believe that means, then they believe that the worldwide community, the historic, the ongoing community of the awakened are all Sufis. They don't really have to think about it. And as I said, they may never state it, and it may never be stated to them, but it's there. What I brought up, and remind you again last time also, is I'd like to mention one more time, I have in several ways, but the way I see it now, from my experience of a lifetime, as I said, the only thing I can tell you is I know everything I ever wanted to know. That's all I can tell you. Everything I wanted answered, everything I wanted to know, I know. It does not transform what you are. The idea, which is everywhere, it is the basis, again, I point out to you, of all of man's myths. I mean all of them. From the heroic ones involving gods, to myths that are fairy tales, that are fables, or that are tales that are considered to be, by some segment of humanity, to be allegorical, to be inspiring. All of them, too, popular novels, popular movies, they all represent transformation. Every great so-called, I accept their opinion, the so-called, all the great books, all the great literature, all the great dramas, all the great plays, all the great poetry of the world, all involve a transformation. Simply put, it's normally a hero or a heroine is transformed. They can be very pithy. It can be the transformation of Red Riding Hood, of Cinderella, which it sounds like is taken normally as a child's, you know, distracting story. Or the ones of the trials of Hercules, the temptations of Christ. It all has to do in Hamlet's difficulties. It all sets up a figure, a hero, a central figure, who goes through a transformation, taken at higher and higher steps from just mere fiction and popular movies. When you start going up, and let's say the next stage, unimportant, but it would appear to be the next stage, would let us say, would be religious. Then you do have the transformation that when you become a Christian, you are transformed. You are made a new man. And it's true with all religions. If you convert to that religion, if you align yourself with that religion, you undergo a transformation. You get a little higher than that in a meaningless way, but we get into the mystical realm. That it's not an institutional thing of you becoming a Christian, it is an individual transformation. The idea of being the old idea of the mystical alchemist, that by awakening, or the process of awakening or enlightenment, is that you undergo a transformation, that you go from something that was base and ordinary into something extraordinary, gold, a refined substance, that you have been transformed. I tell you, there is no such thing. You're not transformed from what you are. What happens is your understanding of life is transformed. But the idea that someone is transformed from what they are, I know it's the most appealing thing in the world. And it subtly came upon me. I mean, over a long period of time, that you are not really changed. What you are does not change. This is belied or denied by all ordinary consciousness, because people far afield from religion, much less mysticism, humanity in general, has a relatively wide acceptance of the idea of transformation. E.g., a drunk quits drinking. A man who for 20 years drank every day, continually hurt himself, beat his family, wrecked his car, one day stops. From humanity's view, from an ordinary view of consciousness, that is a transformation. That you can get dozens of witnesses who will describe the man's life prior to a known date, at which time he underwent a transformation. Quite possibly there's some identifiable circumstance, a horrible car wreck, he kills somebody, or perhaps it's just a doctor says, about one more drink and you're going to be dead. That people can undergo a transformation that has nothing to do with supernatural powers is what I'm trying to get at. And it's not true. What's been transformed was his behavior. And as always, as I'm inclined to say, humans know what's going on. Life just won't let them face up to it. Because, since I picked that example of an alcoholic and his transformation, what is one of the common touchstones of AA, or the medical view of alcoholism? That you're never cured. Once an alcoholic, they say this, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And people will say that. Reformed, transformed alcoholics will say, yes, I'm still an alcoholic, but I haven't had a drink in 10 years. The thing is, the man was an alcoholic. He was born an alcoholic. I'm being very crude now, but I assume you know what I mean. He has not undergone a transformation. His behavior was transformed. A physician's prognosis of his impending death upon continued drinking. His imprisonment for driving drunk and killing someone, and now alcohol is hard to come by. It can be had, but let us say he suddenly undergoes this transformation now that he's been sentenced to 20 years in jail. He undergoes a transformation. No, he doesn't. He is still what he was. In this case, a drunk. The only thing that's been transformed is his behavior. People can, to put it in ordinary parlance, people can transform their behavior. People can change their behavior. I'm not going to argue it's not true, but I know by all common appearances, a person can change their behavior. But I'm telling you what, even from a mystical view, even from a life spent at the very core of it, ceaselessly, for 50 years plus of the mystical life, I'm telling you, people are not transformed. What you are is not changed. Waking up changes what your brain, what the conscious part of your nervous system, conceives of as life. That's why it is transformed. Nothing else. You are still what you are. A drunk, still a drunk. That is tied to why I said I'm glad I started on this, although I've used up tonight's tape. But in the foreseeable future, I think I'm going to continue pointing out things that will never all be the same. You are not going to wake up and become anything like me, which would give you some solace. Does me no good to understand, well, now I'm awake and just being speaking crudely, well, now that I'm awake, let's see. As I said, it took a long period of time gradually to realize, yeah, but I'm still me. That was not what was expected. And it was not sudden. Everything else that I keep describing to you that's ever been worthwhile to me was just something I suddenly understood. I just, suddenly that was it. The whole idea, it still fits with the old idea that people who are struggling to achieve enlightenment, that one day their moment of enlightenment comes upon them. They are transformed. They have the experience. Thank you, Buddha. They wake up. All of it's instantaneous. I agree with that. Everything that has ever been worthwhile in my struggle to do this has been instantaneous, except that. It was not instantaneous that I realized, shit, I hadn't changed at all. Of course, maybe it did, and I just wouldn't face up to it. But I guess that's between me and me. It was a gradual realization. And I can still recall fighting it. It's one of the few I did. I thought, well, I got to be wrong. I even assumed it's because I haven't really reached the limit. In other words, for a long time, I kept thinking, well, I'm in some way missing the point. In other words, I am not fully awake like people have been in the past. I'm not fully enlightened because all of the stories, and I could read it even between the lines, I knew what they were saying, was that when you awaken, when you achieve your enlightenment, you are a changed person. In the sense that the lesser activities, such as religion, that once you give your heart to God, once you pledge your allegiance to Buddhism, Taoism, whatever, that you then are a transformed man. You are no longer what you were, as the New Testament calls it. Indeed, supposedly from the Greek it translates, you are a new man. You are not what you were before you pledged your allegiance to Jesus Christ, the Son of God, however it goes. But you are transformed into a new man. All right, I was well aware of all that. And as I'm telling you, on a higher level is the message, whether you ever read it that way or not, in Sufism, Buddhism, Zen, everything else, was that if you awoke, if you do awaken, if you achieve the great Tibetan liberation, if you acquire enlightenment, then you are transformed. It's an accepted fact, whether, again, it's been stated or whether you ever thought of it that way. And so for a long time I thought, well, I simply have not reached that level. It was hard to believe compared to everything else I understood and what I could tell that they understood. And so for a long time I thought it was some kind of quirk and I'm just trying to compensate. My nervous system keeps producing these thoughts saying, you don't really get transformed, just to make up for the fact that I hadn't been transformed. That was the gradual process. What you are is not changed. But what goes on in your mind, what life produces through your nervous system, that your mind translates all three of them, basically, of the drives, the needs, the hungers to survive, all of the multifaceted, splendiferous, multicolored, meaningless cultural flimflams that the nervous system then, or the results of what the nervous system sends up that comes out of the mind, that is transformed unbelievably. All right, drastically. And the transformation is, you simply realize what I just said. So, the preface was going to be, it's really on that basis. that you're not ever going to change into me. You're not going to change what you are. Nothing's going to change that. What changes, if you ever see what's going on, which I prefer now to wake up or be enlightened, when you realize yourself what's going on with life, there is the one transformation. It does not transform you. That cannot be changed. So we're never going to be the same. Your temperament's not going to change. You don't have to worry about trying to be like me. You don't have to worry about trying to be like anybody, because you can't be like anybody except you. Nothing's going to change about that. So now I am emboldened to start pulling out these things that I noticed about me. But now you got to understand, we're not talking about me that I transformed. I'm talking about the me that I was fucking born with. And I still say that we're from some similar outliner shred within life's general nervous system of humanity, that we're in some common outlying genetic bloodline or genetic neural line of humanity, that we are all in some way related. But you're not going to change. You're not going to turn into me or anyone else. So I feel, if you will keep that in mind, freer to use my nervous system, what I was born as, to point out that now, after 50 years of looking it over, that I can say that even though you're not like me and we're not ever going to be the same, that the common denominator, the commonality of all of us, is that you want to transform your understanding. Is that you're not satisfied with what your mind interprets you, life, other people, human relationships, blah, blah, blah. You're not satisfied with it, which is why you read. It's why you listen to me. It's why you think about this. But I look back now, and I see things, a lot of them I put into stories and little one-liners I used to stick in the mouth of Kairut. But things I never just talked about very directly, such as last time, for those of you who aren't here, I pointed out that I realized I never took life personally, as personally as did ordinary people. It was not something I worked on. I did not transform myself from being a person who took life extremely personal, but then overcame that through a great power of my will and innate talents. No, as far back as I can remember almost, I realized everybody around me took life more personally than I did. I wasn't aware of it then. I didn't have any sort of name for it. But, and I see it now, and what I was doing last time, and I've got probably an endless supply that I'm going to start using until I get tired of it. But I was pointing out to you that I realize now that now you got to find your own way to use this, or your own way to look at it in you. Don't worry about me. That was simply the way I realized my nervous system was constructed. It was not after a transformation. It was not something I worked at. Even if I'd read about that you should do this, you should not take life personally, I couldn't have changed the degree to which I took life personally. No one can. But what I point out to you is that I realize that if you do take life personally, if you're wired up to take life as personally as do ordinary people, I can tell you this, I don't care who you are, you will never see, you'll never realize fully what's going on. You understand what I'm saying to you? It's not that if you don't become like me, you'll never wake up. That's not it. But I'm telling you, there were things that were natural to my nervous system, my view of life, coming from my nervous system, that I tell you now, after spending a lifetime and doing it, taking advantage of it and encouraging it after the fact, though. Well, I encouraged it, perhaps in real time, but it was only after the fact, after I had been doing it, that I began to realize, that I began to take verbal note, that I began to say things to myself, such as I just said, that I, one day I just said to, the thought came to my mind that I was thinking about something, studying something about humanity's, what I was hearing humans talk about their view of life, ordinary people. Or I was reading that somebody, some expression, someone had put to paper on their understanding of life. And one day, the words came to me, I still remember it, that I don't take life as personal as they do. Or perhaps the first part of it that came to me was probably something like, taking life too personally is what being asleep is. And it was probably a second after that that I realized I don't take life as personally, obviously, as other people do. I'm sure the first time I saw that, or the thought came to my mind, I'd already been operating under that. But I'm sure, I'm positive, it wasn't then that I decided, well, I'll start not taking life personally. It was like an understanding. It was a realization. It was adolescent. It was incomplete. But I did realize that if you take life as personally as everyone else does, I realize that's a flaw. Well, that's a detriment to trying to wake up. Not a flaw. This is a hobble. Now, I couldn't explain why. I simply knew it. I just instantly realized that is a hobble. And as I said, it was probably a second after that that I realized, well, obviously, I am not taking life as personally as do ordinary people. My family, friends, just ordinary people. They're not wrong. They're not idiots. I simply do not. And I look back now, what I was bringing up last time, and tonight's preface for next time, I can tell you this. You cannot take, and this is not a sermon from me, and it's not me saying shame on you, because you can't help what you are. But those of you that continue to come here, and those of out there in tape land that continue to stick with this, there's got to be in you something similar to this. Your wiring, your programming has to have some similarity. Did this make some sense? That you can use it. It has to be, or you still wouldn't be listening to me. It would not still be even interesting to you. I am telling you, taking life as personally as ordinary, sane, normal people do will not allow you to ever see what's going on. You got to find how to use that. Now, next time, I won't have to go through this anymore, will I? And everybody say, no, you won't. Well, good. I'm just going to start pointing out because I have, as I said, I have had much fun in the last 48 hours. How many hours do they have in a day now? Now that it's spring. I can't forget. But I have had great fun since last time we met. Of all the things I realized, that I have never, and as far as I'm concerned, they have got to be of practical use. Because without them, I would not have had all my questions answered. I would not understand everything I always wanted to know. So they are practical. And as I said, they are, to some degree, in some form, they have got to be latent. If not nascent. But they have got to be potentially in you. Such as me saying, well, I can see that if you take life as personally as do ordinary people, you will never be able to fully understand what's going on in life. There has got to be some part of your, that rebellious sliver in your nervous system that brings you to this, that as soon as it hears that, it's got to nod. Just as soon as you hear it, there's got to be some, that sliver has got to favorably react. And as Jimmy Durante would say, if he were still alive, and not now, in that great Bush Belt paradise, I got a million of them. The one I was going to try to get to tonight. Should I give teasers? Well, I'll get into it full bore next time. And I'm just going to start, and it may be two or three a night. You know how it is when I start talking, I'm not sure where it's going. But I've got so many of them, and there are things that I wish, I can say that now, but in theory, it seems to me that I wish someone had been able to tell me about me, or I wish I had realized it about me, rather than after the fact, of a whole bunch of these things so that I could look for it in myself, so I could have tested and realized, well, if you take things as personally, if you take life as personally as ordinary people, in other words, if I'd heard this from some source that impressed me, then I think now, I can't prove it, but I feel like I would have been in better shape, better position, if I could have then, after hearing it from a reliable or an impressive source, if then I had gone around and considered and remembered that notion that, hey, if you take life as personally, what happens, if you just take life, you understand what I mean by life, what happens? What happens in faraway places? What happens internationally? And what happens in your life? All the things that happen, death, illness, intrigue, disappointment. That if you take life as personally as do other people, you'll never realize what's going on. If I had believed that was a serious, unavoidable reality of waking up, then I feel as though that I could have made use of it, that it would have been helpful. As I said, now in the last 48 hours, I realized they're just either tons or grosses of such examples that I could mention and plan to. Next show begins in approximately, 48 hours.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com to search through 3,000 talks or just leave us a message.